At high noon on May 4th, 1999, the sun went out. The summer sky had had an unwonted liquid brilliance. The climbing day star had shone all the morning with unusual intensity. But just at 10 o'clock, an intangible mist obscured the sky. A pale and deepening film stole over the crystal infinity of the heavens. The sky assumed a dull, almost copper tinge that developed into a ghastly scarlet pall. In 5 minutes, the sky had changed from a soft and limpid blue to an intense, darkling scarlet. And the appalling suggestion of blood in the dusky crimson depths. There was a grim omen of the fate of Earth. I had got up at dawn for a plunge in the surf. And all the morning, I had been wondering about the bit of beach and the strip of virgin woodland behind it. Content in the restful, soothing peace of that untouched bit of nature. Rejoicing lazily in the vivid greenness of it. In the fresh odors of earth and plants. In the whisper of the wind in the palms. I lounged on the crisp grass in the cooling shade, living in my sympathy with the life about me. Watching the long, soft rollers of the green-blue Atlantic surging deliberately toward the crystal whiteness of the sunlit sandy beach. And the soft cerulean skies were clear, save for the white wings of occasional airships that glanced in the bright sunshine. The morning had a singularly quiet and soothing beauty. My sleepy soul was in harmony with the distant, mellow chime of a church bell. I lay back in the peaceful rest of a man ready to sink lazily into the evening of life. Though I'm still an able man of somewhat less than 30 years, I felt that morning none of the energetic exuberance of youth. I felt something of the age and the agelessness of nature herself. I felt no fires of ambition. I was oddly devoid of feeling or emotion. I felt content to steep my soul for eternities in nature's simple wonders. But I have always been a dreamer. I was a worshipper come unknowingly for the last time to the shrine of life. For even then the doom was gathering, but I was spared all knowledge of the alien menace that was blotting out the sun. I had no premonition that within a few short hours, the balmy Florida coast would be a frozen wilderness whipped with bitter winds and lashed with freezing seas. Well, I had risen at last and was sauntering down the hard white sand in the direction of our cottage, listening idly to the birds, singing on the eve of their doom. I came in sight of the house, a low building covered with climbing vines and half hidden in the trees. I strolled toward it upon the narrow, curving gravel walk, lost in the peace of the rustic setting. The doctor was sitting on the small veranda, gazing sleepily out over the sea, with his pipe in his mouth and his hands on the arms of his chair. Dr. Samuel Walden was the sole person in the world outside the vivid creations of my dreams, for whom I had affection. He was an unusual character. Born in 1929, he was now 70 years of age. His earlier life had been devoted to science, and he had won fame and fortune for himself by the invention of the Hydrodyne subatomic engine. But in the last 20 years, he had done no scientific work, or so I thought, for I had never been behind the little door that he kept always locked. A close friend of my parents, he had been more than a father to me since they were lost in the turmoil of the last outbreak against the Council of Nations when I was 3 years old. We had always lived in the old cottage on the hill, in this natural park on the Florida coast. He loved nature deeply. For many years, his chief interests in life had been plants and animals, for which he cared more than for society. A flower, a dog, the sound of the surf, such things were the joys of his life. Though his hair had been white for many years, his lean, tanned face was unwrinkled, and he was among the strongest men of my acquaintance. In fact, 2 years before, he had won second place at the Olympic wrestling contests. He loves the simple things of life. He had a passion for cooking, and he made it a science as well as an art. He was an inveterate smoker and clung to the habits even when he had to have the tobacco smuggled in from Asia at vast expense. He had an old music box of a type that went out of date half a century ago, to which he used to listen for hours on end. There was little enough about Sam Walden's daily life to show that he was the greatest scientist of the earth and the sole hope for the world in the amazing battle that was brewing. His simple philosophy had changed him far from the energetic young inventor of the Hydrodyne. No one would have suspected the qualities of supreme heroism that he revealed. During the days of my youth, we had restlessly wandered over the globe. We had lived rather aimlessly, for the simple joy of living. The mountains, the desert, and the sea have always had a fascinating call for both of us, and we wandered in answer to that call. And during some of those years, I traveled on a strange quest of my own, but it was a whole decade since we had left our rustic home, and as our latter years had been quiet and tranquil, so the world had lost the fierce energy and struggle for advancement that had driven it during Sam's younger days. It had settled down to the enjoyment of peaceful content. Science had turned from the invention of new machines to the improvement of those in existence, and had died with their perfection until, when the crisis came, Sam was the only man on earth able to understand and to cope with it. The industrial organization had been perfected. Work was done by machines. Men attended them for short hours and played through long ones. There were no rich, no poor. The products of industry were fairly divided. All men received their shares in content and enjoyed them to the full, without troubling themselves about the question of science or religion or of life that had received the attention of the past generation. And upon the peaceful tranquility of that happy, prosperous age, there fell with no warning the Lord Doom that no man could explain, throwing it into frenzied confusion. In the past era, there would have been 1,000 men to attack the problem with all the power of clear, dynamic minds. Now, there was just one man who could understand. It was not so much that scientific knowledge was lacking. Men still studied and talked the language of science. The machines demanded it, but there were none of trained and penetrating minds used to the departing boldly from the world of the known to bring forth the new. Science was no longer living. It was mechanical.